weeknights from 6 on 2FM.
Well, a big thank you to Beda Da Silva for driving us through the afternoon. It is Wednesday, September 4th. I am Shane Dawson and you are listening to Game On. Coming up between now and the new music show at 7pm, Darren Frehill has all the latest from day 7 of the Paralympic Games in Paris as Ireland's Katie George Dunleavy and Linda Kelly win gold in their time trial cycling event. Keith Tracy continues our build-up to Ireland-England in the Aviva, and we'll hear from a couple of Ireland players as well as assistant coach John O'Shea. Damien Lawler brings us the latest Gaelic Games news, and in cycling, Shane Stokes chats La Vuelta, Ross Naman and the Tour of Britain. As always, if you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552, WhatsApp 087187 9200, or we are on X at Game On 2FM.
Game On 2FM.
Good evening. Welcome along to the show. Before we cross live to Paris and join Darren Frehill, Keith Tracy is already in studio. Keith, how are you?
I'm on top of the world, Shane. How are you, buddy?
I'm very well. I'm very well. Why wouldn't I be? Shells could go 6 points clear on Friday.
Yeah.
but come here. We will be chatting Ireland in detail. Are you looking forward to a mouth-watering clash with hopefully a bit of bite to it?
Yeah, I do. I do think there'll be a bit of bite to it. I think the English have an awful lot to thank us for. Carsley, an ex-Ireland international. Grealish, Rice. I think we can claim Harry Kane as well. So it's like Ireland against Ireland. But no, in all fairness, we're playing. You know, they've come out of the Euros finals. They've been there or thereabouts in the last couple of tournaments. So we're going up against one of the best teams and some of the best individual players in the world. So mouth-watering game, but yeah, slightly fearful also.
That sold out as well. That Reviva roar will get us over. Don't be fearful, Keith.
To be fair, look, I know we're going to get into it later on, but the last 7 fixtures, we've only lost once. So very rarely do we actually turn over to the English. And, you know, notoriously, they've always been better than us on paper. But the Fighting Irish put it up to them, and hopefully we can do the same again on Saturday.
If anyone can put it up to the English, I'll tell you, Keith. You are sticking around. We're going to chat Ireland-England, hear from the Irish camp as well. And we might even touch on the League of Ireland, of course. Dundalk Pats is tomorrow. Both shells on Friday as well. But let us cross now to Paris and join Darren Frehill, because it was a busy day for Team Ireland and a successful day for Katie George Dunleavy and Linda Kelly. What's been happening, Darren?
Well, hiya, fellas. It's one of those days where I've actually just sat down here in a seat. Would you believe I am sitting underneath the finish line here at the cycle track, and I think we're the last people here, and the last kind of stragglers are pouring out of the venue here. But it's one of those, you know, one of those days that comes along every so often, and it just makes you so grateful to be doing this job that we do. You know, absolutely terrific story. Just to see Katie George Dunleavy and Linda Kelly win this gold medal, and it was just, do you know what? It was just the way that they did it. It was just terrific. It is incredible. You know, Katie George had a, like you guys both very involved in sport. Katie George absolutely smashed her collarbone back in May. And she won a silver medal on the track at the weekend. And today she's won a gold medal. And then Linda Kelly, new pilot. You know, she's big, big shoes to fill. She stepped in for Eve McChrystal. And she herself, very, very sick herself with a bad concussion. That was back in April. And then for them just to put on the show that they did today was remarkable, Shane. Really remarkable. And I was just so glad to be here. I think it's just one of the great days, you know?
No, it absolutely was. Let's relive how that race was won, and we can hear from the two competitors that you mentioned, Darren.
Katie George Dunleavy, followed by Linda Kelly. Linda Kelly with her mouth wide, gasping for oxygen into the final few hundred metres here. Is it going to be a gold medal winning performance? Well, they're chasing 39.40, and they've got, well over a minute to get to the line in order to secure that. So it's a gold medal for Ireland. Katie George Dunleavy,
yes,
for the second time of asking, 3 times in a row. It's another medal winning performance. Fabulous effort, and it is glory for Ireland, and gold medal in the individual time trial for Katie George Dunleavy and Linda Kelly, and by the absolute whopping margin of 1 minute and 23 seconds. There are some riders still.
Wow. Katie, what is going on here? That was outrageous from you guys. Can you put that into words?
Pain is the word. It was really, really challenging course, really technical. I thought we were going to come off a few times, but that's racing for you. You're on the limit. And we knew it did suit us, of course. We knew that the uphill sections would suit us, so we had to really go over on our power on those uphill parts, and that's where we would get time on the other bikes. And I think we delivered a really good ride, and I think even on the second lap we were still able to push out big power on those hills. So when we heard we were down on the first lap, I was just thought, just keep going.
We were a little bit worried.
In many races where it's not over till you cross that line, so you just got to keep going and you just hope the other bikes maybe fade and you just keep strong. So I just believed that we just keep racing to that finish line. And when I heard we was up, I just was trying to relax and push and feel what Linda was doing in front and just trying to beat as aero as I could be behind her tucked in. But she did so. I'm just so proud of her. She had some pressure. We both had pressure. I was trying to retain my title. She knew that from Tokyo. I wanted to come here and defend my title that I got in Rio and Tokyo. And Linda, you know, came on board last year. And she's done so well, and she had pressure to deliver today, and I believed in her every pedal stroke, and she did. I'm just so proud of her, because she had concussion in May, she had time off the bike, so she had a lot of challenges, we both did this year. So for us to come away with the win, it's just, I'm actually very emotional as well, and I can't quite believe it.
Linda, I'm not sure if this has sunk in yet, you're a Paralympic champion, you guys. How does that feel? How does that sound like?
It's just, it's magic. It's just like a dream. I can't believe it. It's going to take a while to sink in. It's just like, I'm so happy. Like, we both put the work in. It's been a roller coaster of a year this year with Katie's collarbone and my concussion. And I'm just so proud of Katie, how well she recovered from the collarbone break. Like, it was just, she put the work in and she wanted to be here and she just wanted to win. And then we both do. And we both had the same ambition as well. So, I'm absolutely thrilled, just over the moon.
Linda, ambition is one thing, but then to step it in with an absolute legend like this lady here, you know, you must have felt a little bit of pressure. How does that sit with you coming into this?
It was. Katie's a champion and an inspiration, and like I was following Katie and Eve before I even came on the tandem, and I was like, wow, that's just amazing what they do, and I never imagined that I would one day be on the front of that tandem, like, and it's just amazing. And Kate has educated me so much in the last 2 years since I came on board in the tandem, and it's just amazing. Like, I'm learning so much from her, and it's just, yeah, it's absolutely deadly.
She's learning pretty quickly, right? I know you're driving her on as well.
Oh yeah, no. Linda's such a great racer, and she always leaves it out on the road, and she's a phenomenal time trialist. And the time trials we've had before here, you know, we've done very well, and Linda's been learning, but she's just a fighter. I knew that from the first race I did with her, and I knew that today she'd do well, like, her best, and what will be. We just went into it just to try and enjoy it, but she did have pressure and she delivered, and I'm just so proud of her, and I can't believe I've retained my title from Tokyo and Rio. And with the medals from Orla and Roisin last night, you know, it's visually impaired. It's all women medals for Ireland from women and visually impaired women, I think. And if there's any child at home visually impairment, hopefully, you know, they can have inspiration from us women, like paving the way in women's sport and sport for Ireland, and hopefully inspiring some young children that they can believe in anything and they can achieve.
Ladies, it gives me great pleasure to wish you well and go and collect those medals and enjoy every single minute of it.
Thank you so much.
My family are here, so can't wait.
Oh, well done to those two women. Incredible stuff. Katie George Dunleavy and Linda Kelly there. Lots of other cyclists in action today, and we have to give a special shout out to Josie Healian, and she was in with Katie's former pilot, Eve McChrystal. They finished fifth in the same race. They were brilliant. They were contending at one stage. Richelle Timothy was 12th in her race in the individual time trial. Damien Vericker and Mitch McLaughlin, they were 7th in their race. And Ronan Grimes finished 8th in his event. In equestrian, let's talk about Sarah Slattery, 9th in the individual event at Versailles. And I'm going to be really honest here, small bit biased when it comes to Sarah, because she's actually from an area, a little community called Tina in Galway, which is very, very close to me. And I'm extremely proud just to, even for her to be at the Paralympics. But she herself, I have to say, what a story this is for her to be here and to be competing in such an iconic venue. So she was with partnering up with the horse Savona, and their score was 68.410. Unfortunately, not enough to get her inside the all-important top eight, which would have qualified her for a freestyle event, but an absolutely terrific performance all the same for her. Her story, I mentioned already, pretty remarkable, but let's let her take it up. She's been speaking with Eamon Horn.
So when I was 8 years old, I had cancer in my left arm, and to remove the tumour, they had to remove tendons and ligaments and muscles from my left arm. Thankfully, the chance that I would actually lose the arm, thankfully they were able to replace it with tendons and ligaments from my legs. So I still have my arm, my hand, but I just have less strength, and I can't make a fist or stretch it out flat, and the strength isn't there. But like that, I came from a very horsey family, show jumping family. So like that, you fall off the horse, you get right back on. So it was right back into the ponies, but for me it was always like a hobby kind of basis. It was nothing too serious until I started dabbling in a bit of dressage and realised I was better at that than the show jumping. And I figured out that the looped reins I used in the show jumping, I couldn't use them in the pure dressage. And then I slowly and surely figured out about para dressage and para equestrian and the fact that I could use my looped reins. So yeah, about 4 or 5 years ago, I really got into the para dressage. And like, if you had said to me then that I'd be here, there was no way. I wouldn't have believed you. So it is a dream come true, and yeah, I can't believe it.
And 5 weeks after having a baby, you were back in the saddle preparing ultimately, I suppose, for Paris.
Absolutely. And like that, it's been a big, huge family effort the whole way through. Like, I couldn't have done it without my older daughter Harlow, my husband Jonathan, my mum, my sister Sophie, the extended family, my dad, like everybody put in the work behind the scenes so that I was able to come here and do this. Like, poor Jonathan has been a single dad all week, so he has. But yeah, listen, it's been amazing. Yeah, so yeah, 5 weeks after I had Millie, I set up on Savona for the first time. She was a brand new horse, hadn't ridden her before. And 6 months later, we were at the European Championships. So yeah, and it's gone a lot better here than the Europeans. So I am just, yeah, thrilled with it all.
So you're enjoying Paris?
I am enjoying Paris to the fullest. Yeah. Absolutely delighted.
Oh, well done, Sarah. Well done. That is incredible. And you couldn't script that story, could you? Well done to everyone involved. And good luck to Jonathan as well with all the babysitting and everything else that's going on. Do you know what, Shane? I'll continue the Galway love in. Will I just to finish
absolutely
up?
Because, Why not?
Hey, come here. Hey, this is just total coincidence, right? There was one other Galway athlete in action today, and it was Shauna Bouquet. She was fifth in her heat of the 100 metres. This is the wheelchair race at the Stade de France. She is absolutely living her best life, enjoying this brilliant atmosphere inside the Stade de France each and every day. And this is the third event in 5 days. Always going to be a tough one for her. And of course, this is her first Paralympics as well. But do you know what? She absolutely went out through the kitchen sink at it and enjoyed every single moment of it. She spoke to Siobhan Madigan afterwards.
Bouquet in six. It's the top three to go through. So can she make it? Bouquet's getting off to a solid enough start. Alphonse, the world champion, gliding right now. Bouquet, used to the longer distances. If she gets fifth, she might make it. Bayakula's going to take it. Alphonse in second place. And in third, it's Dederick. Bouquet was trying to push up from fifth in the end. Well, that's a good win for Bayakula.
She was speaking to Siobhan Madigan, and we will hopefully hear from the Galwegian athlete. But what a way to win it there, as we really heard. And Will Downing, who's been superb in commentary all morning. He kept me greatly entertained.
No, he's been absolutely savage, yeah.
But the West is awake, Darren.
It is what it is. Before I finish up, right, do you know what? Tomorrow is actually, I don't know what we're going to do with ourselves. It's actually a quiet day from an Irish perspective, but it's going to be a massive day, Shane, because Róisín Éireann is back in the pool, okay, and there's absolutely zero pressure on her shoulders, but there's a lot of good talk around her. She's feeling really good, 2 medals already. And although there's only one Irish athlete, it could be a significant one. So keep tuned for that.
Lots to look forward to.
They're going to kick us out here.
Lots to look forward to. Listen, Darren Farrell, thank you so much for joining us from Paris. We will be keeping you up to date with everything that happens tomorrow as well on Game On. So do stay tuned. We are taking a short break. Lots to come on this evening's show. We're chatting cycling, we're chatting Gaelic games, and we're chatting football with Keith Tracy. And we'll hear from Ireland assistant manager John O'Shea. So do stay with us here on Game On 2FM.
Game On.
GAA.
Now, RTE Sports' Damien Lawler joins us with the latest GAA news. Damien, managerial movement and appointments are continuing at pace. I do want to ask you about an appointment for Kildare, which is confirmed. However, before we get there, the rumour mill is swirling at pace and there are reports that Malachy O'Rourke might be the main man in line for the Tyrone job. What's the latest, Damien?
The latest is, I'd say, there's about maybe five, six top-level counties looking for managers at the minute, and each of them, I'd say, would be glad to have a Malachy O'Rourke type figure involved. But it looks like Malachy will be unveiled as Tyrone manager next Tuesday night at a county board meeting. At the moment, he's the only nominee for the job. He's adopted club, Eric Kieran Shane, have put him forward for the job, and he was heavily linked with maybe linking up with Derry at one stage because of his association with the champions, the club champions, Glenn. But he lives in Ballygall, has been there for quite a while, and it would seem that he's very, very close to being unveiled as Tyrone manager and replacing the giant ticket of Brian Duher and Fergal Logan. That potential appointment will go down enormously well within Tyrone because everywhere he's gone, be it Fermanagh, be it Monaghan, be it Glenn, there's been incremental progress and there's been a very, very significant progress as well. He's one of the top managers in the game. He brings a good coaching ticket with him, usually people like Ryan Porter, but you know, you have great coaches around Tyrone, people like Paddy Talley, who's been involved with Kerry and all that. So I think to have him as a figurehead will be a colossal, colossal achievement for Tyrone GAA, Shane, and it looks very, very close to happening next week, early next week.
Okay, we shall keep an eye on how that develops over the next few days. Just to mark a note as well, staying in Ulster, Armagh ladies manager Greg McGonigal has stepped down today after just one season in charge of the Orchard County, with coaches Darnell Parkinson and Joe Feeney moving up to the joint manager position. Other stories, moving down to Leinster, what we do know is Brian Flanagan has been ratified as Kildare's new senior football manager on a four-year term. He certainly has an excellent knowledge of underage football in the county. So is he best placed now to bring Kildare forward at senior level, Damien?
He's by far, in my opinion, the best person for the job. Brian would have an in-depth, intense knowledge of all things Kildare football from club level. He was the former Kildare junior manager. He led the Kildare under-20s to an All-Ireland final in 2022, led them to an All-Ireland title in 2023. It was the first time since 66 and 67 that back-to-back provincial titles were achieved at Kildare football at under 20 or 21 grade, and Brian Flanagan was the man that brought Kildare to the post in both of those games, beating Dublin on each occasion. Apart from that, I mention him as the junior manager as well. Mm-hmm. He was a selector under Keane O'Neill back in 2016. Keane was senior manager at that time. And of course, Brian then had a spell with Summerhill and Meathchain. He was coach under Conor Gillespie. Summerhill won their first Meath title in 10 years. They've been beaten four finals on the trot. Brian was involved there, a highly, highly regarded coach. But a very, very humble, very quiet, very intelligent manager, goes about his business in a quite diligent way. And it's a four-year deal, and that's there for a purpose too, because I think 4 years are needed to maybe change things around the Kildare, maybe form a new culture. Brian knows what players are coming through. There's a lot of stuff going well in Kildare, the likes of Nate obviously dominating the club scene, Nate CBS as well. Maynoot having a good maybe stronghold of footballers there at university level as well. But at the same time, there's a lot that needs to be done too. Not just at managerial level, not just at senior level, but throughout the entire county as well, just to tie up the loose ends. But look, Niall Cronin's been doing work at minor level. Brian steps away from the under-20 position, now takes the senior role. It's a four-year term. He's got Aidan O'Rourke with him, Damien Hendy and Darrell Flynn are there too, and O'Rourke brought Armagh to the All-Ireland minor final this year, got beaten by Tyrone. So look, it's a good ticket, and they will be, I suppose, their first aim will be to get out of Division 3. But behind the scenes, Brian will be quietly building new structures his own way, I would imagine.
Okay, exciting times for the Lily Whites. From football to hurling, Micheál Dunhill's move back home to Galway. Now, it pretty much means Dublin hurling is at a bit of a crossroads. Like, no white smoke as of yet from Parnell Park, but who's the front runner now for the Dublin hurling gig? Or is there a front runner at this particular moment in time?
Yeah, look, the process is underway, and it's a great question. And Micheál Dunhill had a tough enough gig. I think half the squad that he inherited were not available for his 2 years in charge. He introduced and he kind of blooded 16 new players to the setup, Shane. And not only that, but in year two, you could see his stamp on the team, whereby he trusted the team enough to run through the lines, play through the channels, and embrace that modern brand of hurling that the top teams are deploying at the moment. On Leinster final day, it went horribly wrong. They couldn't put two or three passes together. The ball broke down. Kilkenny pierced their armour on several times. But overall, you'd have to say the project was going in the right direction. They had some big wins under their belt, notably a great result against Galway and Salt Hill. His loss is colossal to Dublin hurling because he's a genuine bona fide hurling man. Noel Larkin, Franny Ford, these guys have been massive lieutenants for him. They know hurling inside out. They've now all moved en masse to Galway. They've been joined by Eamon O'Shea as another coach. To me, it's up there with the best backroom team in Ireland, what Galway have at the moment going into the 2025 season, which leaves Dublin in a quandary. Where do they go afterwards? You're looking at contenders there. I think names have been mentioned, but from what I believe anyway, names like Paul Ryan, who's had a really good innings with DCU, under 20 manager in the past as well. He's been mentioned. Shane O'Brien has been mentioned, the current under 20 manager, led Westmeath to a Joe McDonagh Cup title a few seasons back. Joey Fortune has been mentioned as well. And I think, people have always kind of alluded to the fact that would an outsider like Eddie Brennan coming in help matters? My own information is that the board are keen on an internal appointment. And I'm led to believe, I suppose another name that's always in the mix is Derek McGrath. Mm. But I wouldn't rule out a Shane O'Brien, Derek McGrath ticket at this stage, Shane. They were together the last year in the under-20 setup. Derek went back to Leash, I think, last year. Sorry, they were together 2 years ago. So I'd say, in my opinion, if they're looking for a partnership there, it would be a Derek McGrath, Shane O'Brien ticket. But I think we have to wait and see for that process to unfold. The likes of Joe Fortune, he knows Dublin hurling inside out as well. He'd fancy his chances of getting it too. He's a fairly innate knowledge of all things Dublin and would be former Westmeath manager in his own right too. So you have internal candidates, and it's how they go about maybe assembling what the board feels is the perfect backroom team. Nearly that's what it's all about these days too, Shane. It's not just the manager, although in the case of Malachy O'Rourke, it speaks for itself. But these days, you're looking at the backroom team and the backroom ticket and who that'll be.
Yeah, you need a decent coaching ticket, all right, in inter-county management. Damien, before I let you go, and stepping away from the managerial news somewhat, and like, listen, this isn't a new issue by any means, but
no.
It seems to be back in news headlines at the moment. It's a growing concern for the GAA. Urbanisation and rural decline are phrases that are, let's be honest, are worryingly becoming more prevalent in GAA conversations.
Yeah. And on that note then, at Special Congress last year, the Tyrone Central Council delegate, Benny Hurl, stood up and addressed, and he said that demographics was the biggest crisis facing the GAA. Now, Benny Hurl is the guy you listen to. He's chairman of the GAA's Higher Education Authority. He led UUJ to the Sigerson Cup title this year. As I say, he's an Arbore man true and true, and on a Central Council for his county. He knows the GAA, I suppose, landscape better than anybody, because he's invested in so many levels, club, county, college, administrator. And he shouted at Congress, we need to take action. On the back of that then, Congress passed demographics officer for every county to be implemented and introduced. And that demographics officer has a say at management level, a county board level. So that's very important as well. And I suppose allied to that then, the GAA have started a data hub where they collate a load of information from platforms like Furin, government agencies. And there's no denying the fact that two-tier problem here, Shane. About 36% of our population have moved away, are still left living in rural areas. It was about 54% 20 years ago, and they have migrated into more urban areas. And you're now in a situation where in urban areas, built-up urban areas, you can't get pitches, you can't get facilities, teams, you've got maybe 40, 50 players per squad, people can't get games. And that's a crisis in itself as well. People are being turned away from Gaelic games. So you've got a two-tier problem going forward. Benny is very, very acutely aware of that. He's trying to implement change, trying to draw up a load of proposals to bring to management. That could include looking at the parish rule again. It could include maybe if a club, town's land reaches a certain population, e.g. 10,000, a new club is needed. You can see shoots of new clubs emerging in suburban areas. Not so much in Dublin City, but it's going to be really, really interesting. And people might not think it a glamorous topic or anything, but I think Benny's right. It's going to be a very, very significant point for the GAA to address. in the coming weeks, months and years, because Benny's afraid that if they don't act now, the GAA rural community will become a thing of the past. The way of life for the GAA club helps the rural community will cease to exist, and you will not get adequate facilities or game time if you're tied up with an urban club. And you know what? I can see the ground level in both instances. The challenges are alive, Shane. There's no doubt about that.
Well, this is a major issue that hopefully will be ironed out and resolved in some way or another sooner rather than later. For now, RT Sports, Damien Aller, we'll leave the conversation there. Thanks so much for joining us.
Game on.
Football.
Now, we are chatting football with Keith Tracy. Before I speak to Keith again, though, great news for Piemont United, because Kerry Lettman rose from the bench to fire peas past Dinamo Minsk after extra time as the Dubliners marched into the Champions League qualifiers round one final. Piemont are in the champions path and must come through a semi-final and final in the Croatia-hosted four-team tournament in order to make round two. They faced a tall order against Dinamo, a side stacked with Belarus internationals, but James O'Callaghan's side produced a tremendous display in 26-degree heat. The reigning League of Ireland champions got off to the perfect start at Stadion Gradski. Ellen Dolan drilling home a good low finish in the 6th minute. Dinamo hit back in the 33rd minute when Anasas levelled from a corner. It was nip and tuck thereafter, with both sides cancelling each other out, and the game drifted into extra time. A spark was required to crack the contest open, and in the 96th minute, substitute Lettman provided it, coolly sliding a good finish past Ekaterina Kovalchuk. Piemont held their nerve to close out the game, and they will play Croatian team and host Osijek, who defeated Slovakian Spartak Mojava 2-0 this evening, and that final will be played on Saturday. So great news for Piemont. Elsewhere, Republic of Ireland international Saoirse Noonan scored a hat-trick off the bench as Celtic came from behind to beat Finland's Coupes 3-1 after extra time in their Women's Champions League qualifier. The Cork woman only came on in the 61st minute but quickly drew her side level and added two more in the first half of extra time to settle the result in Lithuania. Celtic will play host Gintra in their final of the round one contest. And finally, Northern Irish Women's Premiership champions Glentoran were eliminated from the competition after a 3-2 defeat to Slovenia's Zenk Mura in Cyprus. They will play one more match in a fourth place playoff, but they won't progress any further. So unfortunate for the Belfast side there. However, we are looking forward to Ireland-England, and Keith, you alluded to it at the start of the show, that there might be a bit of bite. So let's hear from the Republic of Ireland assistant manager John O'Shea on the occasion of playing England.
Yeah, look, I think you'll know from the fans and the player, everyone will know, the manager will know, and he can obviously... We're coming in the bus in the stadium. The game sold out. The atmosphere around it, the history all around the game. So you bring all those factors together. You know it's a brilliant game to be involved in. Every player in the squad will want to play, and you want a positive outcome from it. But ultimately, no, it's a great test of where we're going and where we hopefully want to get to.
Keith, if you were playing in this contest, would you want to take in the occasion and be aware of all these extra narratives, or would you need to block all of that out and just focus at the task at hand of playing a talented English team?
I think you take a certain amount of the history with you. I think as Irish people, we always try to do that. I think that's where the underdog mentality comes from. But you can't get too carried away with it. You get too emotional, you start firing into tackles or running around like a headless chicken. With that amount of quality on the pitch, you'll just get picked off. So you have to play with that little bit of passion, but have to be careful not to step over the line. It is a very, very fine line. And if we tell our players to go out and act like robots and treat it like another game, it just simply isn't another game. I never got the chance to play against England that as a competitive fixture at a senior level, and something I would always want to do, and I'd love to be able to do it on Saturday. And as I say, we're going to be up against it, but it's one of the best teams in the world coming to town, so how can you not be relishing it?
Yeah, no, one of the best teams in the world coming to town. Let's hear again from John O'Shea on the strength of this English team.
Tony, when you see the England squad and the players, that the 26 that were picked, obviously there was potential, we knew beforehand, of lads maybe little illnesses and little niggles or whatever, so they left themselves a bit of space in terms of the numbers they picked, so they still have some good options to pick from, I think, so they'll be okay, but it'll be full focus on ourselves. And look, obviously it brings into the play maybe some of the younger players that they picked in the squad in terms of some of the 21 options that they brought up, so it'll be interesting to see. You have to curb a lot of England players' impact on a game. It's when you play a team that have just been in a Euros final, you know they have lots of threats, They have lots of options to pick from. And I think you know that whatever 11 that they pick and the squad of players that they have to bring on and change games as well, that's going to be full focus on our point of view of what we can do to stop them, but more importantly, what we can do to cause them problems.
We spoke yesterday on the show, Keith, with Paul Corry and Mark Langdon about the couple of new faces in Lee Carsley's England team compared to Gareth Southgate's squad for the Euros as well. We know Jude Bellingham's injured, I don't know Ollie Watkins, and they're missing a couple of big names as well. But these new guys that are coming through, and not that the Ireland team would, or not that anyone would be complacent, but we can take for granted that just because we haven't seen these week in, week out on a regular basis, and they're not on newspaper headlines every weekend, that these are still a decent crop of players.
Yeah, I'm surprised nobody's tried to throw that narrative at us yet, that this is a weakened English team coming over to Dublin. I know they've only just come out of the Euros final, but when I throw a couple of names at you, the likes of Cole Palmer, Bellingham is injured, Ollie Watkins has been sent home, Kyle Walker, Phil Foden, and Tony's not really been into the fray because of the Saudi move. So when you think of all those players, you're thinking surely they've come down a level. But if I just throw Eze, Gordon, Bowen, Saka, Kane,
stop, Keith, stop.
You just think the levels really aren't coming down, and then you think, well, maybe defensively, because we have some, you know, obviously Smodics or Benny both going to Ipswich, I think, and little relationship there. Adam Eda doing so well at Celtic. Can we go and hoard to the English defensively? And you're thinking, I really like little Rico Lewis, played every minute in the Premier League so far from Manchester City. Liveramento, he's just took Kieran Trippier's spot at Newcastle. Looks like he's going to do the same at international level. I know Trips is just retired from international football, but Liveramento, Rico Lewis look really, really good. Gibbs White, Madueke, and these are lads who don't have a whole host of experience, a lot of their debuts as well. So I think Lee Carsley has chosen a hungry team. It's not, there's a lot of faces there who didn't play an awful lot of time at the Euro, so it's a hungry team. It's a dangerous team. Like I say, Eze's in great form. Gordon, I love him, and Bowen is brilliant. Saka, ever present for Liverpool, being brilliant, and Kane still doing his thing, scoring goals. And look, when you look at how we might set up, you know, I'm thinking, can we get at them? Can we keep them wrapped up in cotton wool, some of their dangerous players? Robbie Brady, for me, is probably going to play left back as the only natural left footer that we really have. Him up against Saka is a big, big ass. And on the other side, if Anthony Gordon or Eze plays, we're looking at a Matt Doherty, maybe Seamus Coleman as a three centre-halves coming over there. So two new managers, not quite sure what we're going to get out of each. I think the Irish team is a lot more predictable than the English one will be. So we'll have to wait and see. But yeah, I think Lee Carsley's in the driving seat to get the job. I think he'll go and beat us, and he'll go and beat Finland, and he'll go and beat the Greeks quite convincingly, and he'll get himself the job.
Well, speaking of Lee Carsley, John O'Shea was speaking about the interim England manager.
I'm sure he's hoping so. He'll be thinking that he's jumped up from the 21s after being a successful under 21s manager, winning the Euros with them. So I'm sure maybe the people behind the scenes would like to see him continue that kind of role into the senior one, and obviously they've given that chance, but I'm sure there'll be a cry out for other names as well from the public in England as well. But as far as we're concerned, nothing for us to worry about. Our focus is on the start of Nations League qualifiers, the manager coming in, Hamer, that we give him our full backing, our full support, and hopefully we get off to a good start as a teammate. And as a person, any time I see him, I'd always get on well with Lee. Carzo, as he's known as. But look, it's one of them. It's a different scenario now. I haven't seen him recently, but get a chance to catch up with him at some stage on Saturday, I'm sure. You have to curb a lot of England players' impact on a game. It's when you play a team that have just been in a Euros final. You know they have lots of threats. They have lots of options to pick from. And I think you know that whatever 11 that they pick, and the squad of players that they have to bring on and change games as well, that's going to be full focus on our point of view of what we can do to stop them, but more importantly, what we can do to cause them problems.
So that was Shazy speaking on Carzo. I mean, you'd be allowed to call them by their nicknames. You've played football.
Oh, it's Josh. We call John O'Shea Josh. Yeah, it's his initial. Okay. So we call him Josh, yeah. Josh. The insider stuff from the camp there.
That's why we have Yonke. This is the top secret information we want. They're going to be looking to hit the ground running. Obviously, Lee Carsley will. He's hoping for the permanent gig as well. But from an Irish perspective, Hamer, Halgrimson is going to want to hit the ground running because there's a lot of focus on him. In a way, though, that we're talking about Rice and Grealish return, and we're talking about Lee Carsley interim manager, and obviously with the Irish connection and Bellingham and Watkins and all these Palmer missing as well, all these extra narratives, and it is always going to have a lot of narratives when an Ireland England fixture is upon us as well in the Aviva Stadium, a sold out fixture. Might that be a good thing that all the focus isn't on, Jesus, what squad has he picked? How is he going to line out? And it's not at the forefront of every conversation about how we're going to approach this game from an Irish point of view.
Yeah, well, like I said, I don't think the players will be, you know, they won't be getting up every morning and going through the papers. They might be flicking through their social medias, as so many of the modern footballers do. But I think you just get a bit, little bit disconnected from it. As I say, you tap into the passion of the game, you link into all that. But in terms of what's going on around, you know, Rice, Grealish, the Irish caps, you know, is there a bit of ill feeling there? Yeah, look, if a ball dropped and it was 50-50, maybe you might do something about it. But I don't hear you going around thinking, I want to line them up, I want to get them. At the end of the day, they're professional footballers and they decided not to play for Ireland. So we can't be sitting here with, you know, a sour taste in our mouth because they're not in our team. So we can only worry about ourselves. But like I say, I'm sure if Seamus Coleman, if a ball drops 50-50, I'm sure he wouldn't be too backwards about coming forwards in the tackle.
We need to be honest. That's what we all want to see.
Like, yeah, of course
we do. That's even to get the crowd up for it, because I can't remember too many occasions now that there's been a proper raucous, vitriolic atmosphere in the Aviva. Like, you need it.
I'm totally with you, Shane. The last game we won, the Hungary game, I know it was only a friendly. We won the game 1-0. We actually played quite well in it. But the little sideshow of that was Seamus Coleman up against Szoboszlai, the Merseyside derby. And Seamus Coleman just went after him and after him. And you can imagine Szoboszlai saying, you know, I have a Euros to go to here, leave me alone. But Coleman just wasn't having any. So when that little bit of niggle comes into the game and it's not treated like a friendly, and let's be honest, that's why the Nations League was created, because we want less friendlies. We want more games with a little bit more meat on the bone, and that's what we're going to get here. It's Ireland and England in a competitive game. You know, any 50-50 balls are going to be very, very hotly contested, and I'm hopeful we can be very competitive. Like I say, the last seven meetings between the two, we've only lost once. We've no wins, we've six draws, I get that, but we don't generally get turned over too badly by the English, and I'm hoping for more of the same.
Yeah, let me be clear as well. I'm not talking about lining up anyone to take them out. It's just, I mean, for a physical contest.
Strong tackles.
That's what I'm used to watching in the League of Ireland, Keith. There is a lot of positivity since Hamer Algrimsson has come on board, and John O'Shea was speaking about the Ireland head coach.
It's been good. Most importantly, it's been good for the players to see what he's about. Obviously, as you mentioned, getting to know him the last few weeks, being here in Abbottstown, going out to games, and you're just talking about ideas. But I think in terms of the most important thing for me is I know he's a very good manager, he's a very good coach. The details he gives the players, I think it's more of a question. I think I know what I'm seeing, what his information he's given, but the players will obviously be the most important in that sense. But no, as I've said, the clarity is there for everyone. And I think that's the most important thing.
Clarity. That's the big thing about what vision he wants to paint for the players as well. Are we going to see a completely... You mentioned earlier, Keith, that it's a predictable Ireland team compared to England. But are we going to see a complete sea change in the approach from Ireland?
I think we will be a lot more John O'Shea-like than it will be Stephen Kenny-like. And I mean this as a nod to Stephen Kenny. I think he got every ounce of football he could have got out of those players in an Ireland short. And look, I know Smodics has come in, he's probably shown that little bit again, but every now and then another player like a Troy Parrott, Aaron Connolly, whoever it is over the years, comes to the forefront, and all of a sudden we seem to think maybe we can play a bit of football now. That's not the case. We're going up against some of the best teams in Europe, like England, Greece. The Finnish are not a bad team either. And I don't back us to go and play football against anybody, really. I know, like, when you look at the teams we've been able to turn over, Malta, Gibraltar, Armenia, these are not England. They're not the Greeks. They're not the Finnish. So the only way we go and win games of football is being very, very pragmatic, not giving anybody anything easy, not messing around with the ball in the middle of the pitch, getting the ball up into the final third. Les Schmodics, Ogbeni, Ferguson, Ida, whoever it is, Smallbone, go and win the game. The rest is just go and defend, keep clean sheets. And look, with the defenders we have, with Treason, we've three brilliant centre-halves. We've probably got about six really, really good centre-halves. Doherty starting to get a bit more time at Wolves. Coleman looks ever-present as well, getting better every time in an Ireland short. I know he's getting older, but performances have just been very, very steady from him. So look, blueprint for Ireland, keep clean sheets, see if we can go and nick something. It's not going to be the prettiest thing in the world, but you know, we've had the last couple of years of trying to play football and we've got absolutely nowhere. And the games that we've come out with credit is the Dutch games, the French games, where we've been workmanlike and we've just tried to nick something. So don't shy away from it. You know, I look at the Scottish, I always look at Steve Clark and he says, you know, we don't play anybody else's way. We're Scotland and we play the Scottish way. And they hustle and bustle teams in Hampden, they get after them, they put them under pressure, and they even managed to turn over Spain there. So if you can turn over the likes of Spain with a hustle and bustle performance, and I know on paper the Scottish are probably better than us, but it's a real team mentality. Get after people, press them properly, don't give anybody anything easily. And look, I'm not expecting us to go and beat the English, Shane. I don't think we'll get any points off the board over the two English games, but the Greek game, the Finnish games are the big, big ones for me. Similar to Stephen Kenny's reign, nobody was given out when we lost to the Dutch, nobody was given out when we lost to the French, but it's the so-called teams that are closer to our level that we really need to be competing better against.
I think Hamer even alluded to that already, that the Greece match is almost more important.
It is,
of our campaign.
Yeah, I don't think anybody would be going in and telling the players, look, don't worry about the English game, just that look after itself. Yeah. But I do think, you know, there's a certain amount of proud Irish men walking into the dressing room, you're probably going to get up flat. If you're a footballer and you're not up for Ireland against England, you're in the wrong game, you really are. So the Ireland game, I understand it probably should look after itself, but I would already have one eye on the Greek game and thinking, and coming, I feel like the whole nation feels like we owe them a little bit of revenge. But I think we all underestimated them a bit as a footballing nation. We thought the Greek league not that strong, the national league or the national team can't be that strong, and it was lazy by us. And they're all very, very good technicians and comfortable on the ball. So it should be a little bit, you know, it's a yardstick to see if we've evolved over the last year or so.
So a dour affair will suit us on Saturday.
It would, it really would. And look, there's no point, there's two sides of the game. Everybody says we want to see this, you know, nice style of play, sexy football, get the ball down. Against the English, if they know the Irish are going to try and play football, they're licking their lips thinking that's exactly what we want, the game of football against the Irish. If we make it horrible, make it pragmatic, make them disinterested, don't want to be there, standing on toes, taking times over things, they could become disinterested. And there could be a couple of debutants on the park as well. So hopefully, Shane, I'm not convinced, but I'm hopeful.
Well, Dublin Old School is in the Olympia tonight, and I think there's going to be another old school battle in Dublin on Saturday. And we will be continuing our build-up to Ireland, England throughout the week tomorrow, and Marie will be chatting more on Friday. Keith, before we finish our football chat, a couple of minutes left on Association Football. Dundalk Pats tomorrow, speaking of matches with a bit of bite and a bit of few narratives to it as well. Are you hopeful for your beloved St. Pats to continue their decent run of late?
Yeah, I'm very hopeful. I'm hopeful that Stephen Kenny can get out of the St. Pat's squad, what he did in Europe. You know, the wingers, El Bouzebi, has been an absolute breath of fresh air since he's come into the team. I'm really starting to fall in love the way he's just an old school winger, gets it, runs at you, gets in behind, will come inside, and all of a sudden, well, Rainey's come to the party, he must be looking over to the right wing thinking, yeah, I'm getting involved in this as well. Aidan Keane coming to the club very, very early for him, but indicators look really good. One of the mainstays, and I always say this, is if you can stop Chris Forrester, or if Pats can get Chris Forrester on the ball, he's generally the one that will get Pats playing. And Chris has started to come to the party over the last couple of months as well, which is exactly what St. Pats need. So just need to see that little bit more consistency in the league. But from a Dundalk point of view, I think they'll be licking their lips thinking, let's get them down to Oriel Park and try and give Pats a real good game. But, you know, from their point of view, you know,
do they have the fight in them to stay up?
I think they do. I think the fact that the Pats game got called off, maybe it's us against the rest of the league, can we go and do it? And look, I don't think, you know, Dundalk are not looking thinking, can we go and catch Shelburne at the top of the league? They're just trying to reel in Drogheda, and if they can get into ninth place in the league and go into the relegation playoff, that is a bit of success for them. But when you look at the games they have on paper, it's very, very difficult. They've got Pats at home, Bowes at home, Derry at home, Shamrock Rovers at home. Don't see them on paper getting a lot of points there. In a way, it doesn't get any easier with Waterford, Sligo, Galway, and the last game of the season is Drogheda at home. So look, I think if they could get it to Drogheda at home, what a great game, what a great occasion, that'd be a relegation playoff in its own right.
Yeah. Oh, what a way the season is shaping up. As we mentioned, we discussed the league around in detail with Paul yesterday. Derry Shell's last day of the season, a loud derby as well, Dundalk. But Dundalk do have a game in hand over Drogheda as it stands, and there's 1 point separating them. So it would be even to get a point. Now, the goal difference, Drogheda minus 17, Dundalk minus 19. So still wouldn't work in their favour, but every point would count as the League of Ireland season goes on. Before I let you go, Keith, as well, I think we're just going to do it every day that we're chatting football now. The League of Ireland title race, bit of a sliding doors moment on Friday.
Yeah, I never really was willing to press the panic button on Shelbourne again, because I don't think, you know, people are saying that the goals are drying up, they're not playing as well as they did. Shelbourne were never a really attractive team on the eye for me, but they eke out results, and they probably wrote their luck a little bit against Dundalk. I know Kenny had a lob, there was a bit of a mix-up in the defence, he hit it too high, O'Kane hit the post, so Shelbourne wrote their luck a little bit at times, but they got over the line, and I'm sure Damien Duff would be thinking, at certain points of the season, performances go out the window when it's about results, and Shelbourne got the result, and that's all that matters.
Yeah, I don't think Shelbourne are pretty to watch since 2004, Keith.
Well, this is why I'm very reluctant to press the panic button. They can just eke out results, and that's what you need at the latter end of the league.
No, most certainly. Great stuff, Keith. We are going to turn our attention to cycling, because Shane Stokes of the Velo will be joining us to chat cycling. But first, we will hear from Ben O'Connor, who enjoyed a rare trouble-free day to maintain his 5-second lead over Primoz Roglic in the general classification after stage 17.
It wasn't too hard. It was a little bit treacherous on the descent, though. They were really, I wouldn't trust them that much. But, it wasn't too complicated in the end. I mean, we've done a lot of riding so far in this race, so it was good for the boys to have a bit of a break. It was much needed.
Can it be more complicated tomorrow?
Probably brake management would have to be a lot more proactive, but it should normally be an easier finish. But this La Volta Sprint is always throwing a couple curveballs around.
So, Shane Stokes, will Ben make it to the end in red?
Really unlikely, unfortunately, for Ben. He's coached actually by the Irishman, Stephen Barrett, who also coaches Sam Bennett. So there is an Irish connection there. And obviously the name O'Connor, there must be some Irish origins. And I've never asked him that, actually. I will do that next time I chat to him. So it's looking dodgy, because he had a very good lead after stage six. He won that with a really huge breakaway and a really powerful performance. But Primoz Roglic, who has won three previous editions and is in line to take a record-equaling fourth, has been whittling away at that lead and has reduced it. The only time that O'Connor's actually gained time at Roglic was in stage 9, when he took a bonus sprint for third place. So since then, it's all been the Primoz Roglic show in terms of whittling back his lead. Now, Ben O'Connor's performed really well in kind of limiting those losses. But 5 seconds, and you've got tomorrow's stage, which should be okay, but could be tricky, but probably will be okay for him. But then it's followed by two summit finishes, and then the even if you were to hang on, which is very unlikely given the momentum of the race, the Sunday's stage in Madrid is a time trial, and Primoz Roglic is an incredible time trialist, so it's looking very dodgy for him. But podium finish would be his best ever. He's finished fourth in Giro, fourth in the Tour, so I suppose he can target that and know that he's been one of the kind of stars of the race.
Okay, just on today, Caden Groves pinched victory in his new green jersey, and Eddie Dunbar, Darren Rafferty, how did today unfold?
Yeah, today was really just it was the breakaway day. It was a really wet day, so it was more a day for staying out of trouble. It was almost always going to be a sprint stage, and that's how it proved. So Eddie Dunbar actually moved up one place to 14th overall, because the Russian rider Alexander Vlasov lost over 10 minutes. Not quite sure why that is. Actually, the news hasn't come through yet on what happened to him. But Dunbar, 14th overall, he's capable of more, but he went into this, you know, having had a season complicated by injury. And he did take that brilliant stage win earlier in the race, so he'll be, you know, really psyched by that. And I think that'll turn a corner for him. If his build-up had been better, he would be doing better in the overall standings. But he said before the race that the World Championship is a big goal for him. So if he comes out of the race with anything left in the tank, he could be really good in that. So that's a big target. And Darren Rafferty is really, he's in his first year as a pro, and he's riding for teammate Richard Carapaz, who is in fourth overall. So Darren has sacrificed his chances for Richard, but he's building, I suppose, strength and experience for the future.
Okay, great. So if we move on to the Tour of Britain, 28-year-old Welshman Stevie Williams powered a second stage victory, but plenty of Irish interest here as well.
Yeah, that's right. So there's Rory Townsend, former National Road Race champion, was 24th in the bunch sprinting for 9th place. And Liam O'Brien was also there. Liam O'Brien is a very interesting rider. He's just 19. He was 3rd overall in the route to the Flèche de Sud in Luxembourg this year and was 3rd in the Ross Tolchin. So he's part of the Little Trek development team. Little Trek is one of the biggest teams in the sport, and they have a development wing, and they've deemed him talented enough to bring him on board, and he's again building experience in this race. And Dean Harvey was away for much of the day in the break, so he's got a talent, I suppose, for going in long breakaways, and did it again today. So yeah, he was riding well also.
Okay, lots to get through, Shane. So if we just move on to the Ross and Mon, actually, news on Sam Bennett's health, speaking of Irish riders.
Yeah, so Sam has been he hasn't quite been himself. He was sick in the Tour de France. He did take 4th on a stage in the Tour, which was his best showing in the Tour this year, and then pulled out the following day. So he's had stomach problems. He was sick also in the Tour of Poland with the same, and then also more recently in the Renewi Tour. So he's had stomach issues in those last three races. I understand the team is getting that checked out and trying to work out what's going on. So if they can work out whatever issue it is, he'd be in a much more solid place. He hasn't really been himself the last couple of years. He's trying to get back to that Tour de France winning form he had when he won 2 stages in the green jersey. And if they can get his health worked out, then I think he'll be in a much better position going into next year.
Well, hopefully we will see Sam back at his best. And the Ross na Mon, the 18th edition of the Ross na Mon, took to the parade in Kilkenny for a ceremonial start, and then a short 75-kilometre stage today.
Yeah, that's right. It went to Callan today. There was a it's really the opening stage, so things tend not to be you get a taxi, but it tends to come down to a sprint finish, and that indeed happened. So Mia Griffin of the Das Hutchinson team won that. She was part of the Irish the 4 Irish riders who set a new national record in the Paris Olympics. So she's a very strong performer. She was she won 2 stages last year. She's targeting the overall this year, and just a few minutes ago she won the opening stage ahead of Robin Clay, her teammate, and then Iris Mulder. So she'll have the leader's jersey heading into tomorrow, which is Portlaoise to Mount Roth.
Okay, lots to look forward to. Shane, before I let you go, I can't let our household cycling expert yourself go anywhere without mentioning Katie Georgian-Levy and pilot Linda Kelly winning gold today. What was your reaction to a terrific event?
Yeah, fabulous. It's really, really good. I mean, Katie Georgian-Levy was herself and Eve McChrystal were the stars of the last Paralympics. They won the road race and the time trial, and they were 2nd in the individual pursuit then. And the cyclists actually last time around were the most successful of all the various sports that Ireland had in the Games. And Katie George is trying to do the same again. So she was 2nd with Eve McChrystal in the individual pursuit on Sunday. And then she dominated the time trial today with Linda Kelly, who is her new partner. This is the first time that Linda is racing with her in the Paralympics. Linda's a very, very strong rider. She's younger than Eve, and this was, I suppose, this Paralympics was about handing over to the next generation. So Linda has taken over. I understand it's Katie George's last Paralympics. So Josephine Helian is the, I suppose, will step into her shoes, and she was partnering today with Eve McChrystal and finished 5th. But yeah, very, very strong performance by Katie Georgian-Levy. With the road race coming up, I wouldn't be surprised if she adds to that, because she did take those 2 gold medals last time around and partnered with Linda. She's going to be a really strong combination.
Great stuff. A 7th Paralympic medal for the glittering career of Katie Georgian-Levy. For now, Shane Stokes of the Velo, thanks so much. Big thanks to Andrew O'Connor and Laurie Davis for working on this evening's show. Game On is back from 6 o'clock tomorrow, but don't go anywhere. Stay tuned to 2FM, because Jeremy Winters is up next with the new music show after we take a short break and check in with the news there. I shall speak to you at 6 o'clock tomorrow. Until then, mind yourself. RTE 2FM.